This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time to grab your popcorn and your drink. Please take your seat and always silence your cell phones. The next showing of Place to Be Nation's Laugh-In Theater with Andy Atherton is about to begin.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the theater, the Laugh-In Theater. I am Andy Atherton, your host, and thank you for joining me tonight. Tonight we have a great movie, a movie that is one of my all-time favorites that I saw, you know, probably about the main character's age at the time it came out. And so it has a very special place in my heart. But speaking of special place in my heart, let me bring in my guest. He is the host of Greetings from Allentown over on the Pro Wrestling Only podcast feed, as well as the Adams Division podcast, which appears on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, as well as he is often the third man on the booth on the Place to Be podcast, Mr. Peter Winston. Peter, how are you tonight?
I am so excited to be watching The Goonies right now. And even though as we're watching it through, I've already watched it today, it's basically me reliving my fourth grade experience of watching this movie virtually every day after school.
I think everybody does that at some point in their life. Everybody wants to be a Goonie. You always fight over who gets which Goonie is who. It's kind of like fighting over like which member of the A team you want to be when your friends were playing, which I remember doing that as a kid as well. But we'll talk about the Goonies, the movie that we are watching tonight, in just a few minutes. Let's kind of talk to Pete a little bit about his shows, since this is his first appearance on Laugh-In Theater. Luckily, though, it's not my first time being on a show with Peter. Peter has been on The Great Debate. He has been on plenty of other fun shows. I think you're on the inaugural episode of the Looking Back Sports, I believe, too.
Yes.
Well. Yes, which is on hiatus.
I think I made some horrible predictions on that, which I should probably just stay away from sports shows because I've made some horrible predictions that if somebody wanted to call me out on it later, I would look like a real fool.
Well, you know, not the only person here that does that kind of stuff when it comes to predictions. Mm. But so let's kind of talk about your show. You know, you have a very fine show over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, Greetings from Allentown. You want to tell everybody what that show is about?
That it's ostensibly a wrestling show that doesn't really have a whole lot of wrestling content, if I can help it, some weeks.
Yes.
Because I might be a little bit down on current wrestling. But what I do is I'll take an episode of wrestling, like let's say a WWF Superstars from 1987. And there are so many different ways that I can go with, you know, what I'm watching. I like to go to absurd lengths. Like for my next show that I was taping now, which is on WCW in 1991, Sid Vicious shows up. And I have this whole thing where I think of Sid Vicious as a priest-like character. So I read the second letter of Paul to the Corinthians in Sid Vicious's voice. Because I don't know. It might be funny. It might not be. But I had fun doing it, even if I felt a little foolish as I was getting to paragraph three.
Well, I mean, I've had on a show somebody doing Austin Powers as if Jim Ross was, or no, Dr. Evil as played by Jim Ross. So yeah, so it's been there's been plenty of funny ways to go. Yes, Greetings from Allentown is very funny. That is a solo shot that you do, correct?
Yeah, it's it can be tough some weeks coming up with stuff to talk about. Usually I would just look around at the outside world of, say, commentary. That's gotten tougher the last few months because there's not as much of an outside world as there once was. But luckily I've started doing another show on a cake with my pal Keithy Langston, where we GFA Live, I call it, where we just watch something out on YouTube and just record it for an hour and go. Mm-hmm. Sort of like what we're going to be doing here with the Goonies.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, I've been doing the same thing. This is a Laugh-In Theater proper, I like to call it, but we've been doing, Laugh-In Isolation Theaters, which usually we try to find something that's just streaming and it's kind of silly. And we try to get a group watch in so that it's kind of like a free form and it's just people blowing steam, kind of just, you know, try and take a moment to forget about what's going on and just laugh about The Naked Gun or Just Friends or Police Academy or whatever others we may watch while we're still doing this, even though things hopefully will be turning the corner soon. Also, you have another show that you host with Steve Bennett that is called the Adams Division Podcast. That appears on the Placement Nation wrestling feed. What's that show about?
Well, it's a roughly quarterly. I think we've run it for the last couple of years where we've mostly done wrestling shows like during WrestleMania season. We'll rank WrestleManias, but we'll generally stay in the 80s and 90s because that's more of our comfort zone, what we're more comfortable talking about. But we've also done general sports. I liked the two-parter that we did of our favorite single-season sports teams. I tried to not do all Boston sports teams. Well, you'll be happy to know I kind of made myself limit. Like I couldn't pick the Patriots six times. Like I chose them twice out of 10. That was the max. Like you'd be surprised to hear me talk about the 1995 Houston Rockets or the 1990 Cincinnati Bengals, because believe it or not, those ended up on my list.
Hmm.
And the fact that I'm apparently a huge basketball fan, or I've really discovered that about myself over these last few months, watching all old games and stuff, it's been great.
All right. Awesome. And you also, like I said, you appear on the Place to Be podcast. You are there mostly when they do like Saturday Night's Main Event or The Main Event, which were some of my favorites actually growing up because, you know, it was on real TV. It was at night. It was always like those cool backgrounds in the beginning. The little interviews, the promos, you know what I mean? And it's always, you know, although I wasn't that smart a wrestling fan when I was young, I kind of caught on to the something that they would do where if there was a match, like a title match, and the challengers lost, if there was ever a rematch, the challengers always won. So mm-hmm. I tried to figure out that booking cadence at a very young age. But I remember, it was a fun show. I'm glad that, and you add a lot of color to those episodes of Place to Be podcast when you do those.
And I love doing it. I feel like I'm the NBC correspondent. I almost feel like Kenneth Parcell from from 30 Rock is like the, oh, I should talk in that voice. But
all right.
I'm part of the Place to Be Nation page program.
Yes. You've graduated to a semi-regular appearance.
Yeah.
All right. So, yes, like Peter mentioned earlier, we are watching The Goonies. This is the 1985 classic action adventure comedy starring, I can't believe I have to look at the cast list. I should know some. I had Sean Astin, Josh Brolin, Jeff Cohen, Corey Feldman, Cary Grant, Martha Plimpton, Ke Huy Quan, John Matuszak, Robert Davi, Joel Pantoliano, Ann Ramsey. So much great character actors. They actually just had, I don't know if you saw it, Pete, they all kind of, the surviving members, I didn't watch the whole thing through, but appeared on a Zoom or something reunion.
Yes.
They did. It's amazing. And most of them have not aged a bit. I mean, some of them look a little long in the tooth, but I mean, like Cary Grant looks the same. I mean, Josh Brolin just looks like, you know, you put him in the oven for too long. Jeff Cohen looks nothing like Chunk these days.
Yeah.
You know, Sean Astin really looks and sounds like just like Mikey for the most part, just, you know, like he ate Mikey. how come you picked this movie, Pete?
Well, The Goonies kind of almost strikes me as a movie where if you're born between, I'm going to say like 1970, 71, and 1983, this movie is really going to strike a chord with those people because it came out in 85. So I would have been six. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it in the theater, but I feel like I saw it not too long after because this was a pretty big phenomenon because mm-hmm. there was two video games for this. I mean, not every movie got video games made for it in the 80s, and this one got multiples of that. And, of course, it would air on the Disney Channel. NBC used to air this movie a lot, and the tape that I had of it, unfortunately, was from the Disney Channel, which was pretty well edited and is actually a slightly different version than what we're going to be watching here, not just for the cursing, but they substituted in scenes and took mm-hmm. out other stuff. So I was so happy when I got a DVD player 20 years ago and then was able to purchased the special edition for this, like, oh, now I can see the real movie from when I watched it the first time, and I'm not watching the weird scene in the convenience store that they would only show where they were cutting out other stuff. But the characters here are a little bit older than me, but I think it speaks to really anybody, you know, at that young age.
Now, see, you just spoke my language, because I'm born in 1972, so I was just shy of 13 when this movie came out. I did see it in the theater. I went to see it. Now, this is the only time in my life. I have a large family on my dad's side. I have two cousins that are somewhat close to me in age, my cousins Garrett and David. This is the only time we've ever gone to the movies, the three of us. So we did not go to see The Goonies, though, that night. We went to a local movie theater called Movie Land in Yonkers, New York. And we go up there, and we went to see Brewster's Millions, that fine Richard Pryor.
Oh, I love that movie.
That is a fun movie. But that was, we were going to see that, and we go to buy the tickets, and the person's like, we're actually not showing Brewster's Millions at that time. Now, this is, you know, before the internet and all that stuff. It's like, we're showing a sneak peek of a brand new movie called The Goonies. We're like, what's The Goonies? They're like, well, it's a movie. It's like an adventure movie with some kids around your age that they go on, like, you know, they look for treasure or something like that. And Steven Spielberg, you know, directed it or produced it. It's, you know, he produced it. It was directed by Richard Donner. So, like, sure, why not? And we, like, had no frame of reference, and just from the moment, we'll talk about it when we get there, but the moment, like, Chunks, like, in, like, the video arcade and sees the car chase and the milkshake and it goes all over the place, it's like, oh, shit. I mean, I'm like, we're in. We are in. And yep. This just became, like, a beloved movie to me since that time.
It's funny that you brought up Brewster's Millions, because I'd have a lot to say about that movie, but not as much as I do about The Goonies, which I love. Some of it might come off as negative, but it's kind of almost like wise guy criticism that I have of this, because it's because I love it so much that I care.
We can make fun of it, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right, so before we're going to start the movie in just a minute. Don't forget, check us out on all of our feeds here at Place to Be Nation, as well as the Pro Wrestling Only feed, which Peter has a home with on the wrestling feed. Don't forget, Place to Be Podcast, my show's Great Debate Wrestling and Evolution of, lots of fun stuff, as well as the main event. Over here on the Pop feed, we have the Great Debate, Laugh in Theater, It Was a Thing on TV, Diamond Conversations, new shows in the works coming very soon. We are going through a little bit of a transition here behind the scenes, and hopefully bringing you more new voices. Don't forget, check out our associate podcast feeds. That is the North-South Connection. That is JT Rosero and Chad Campbell. All kinds of wrestling and pop culture stuff on there, like Jeff Learns Wrestling, No Holds Barred, Monday Night Wars, all that, Wrestling Wars and whatever, that's the name of that show. And also The Jenny Position, which features Freakout Drive-In, Geek and Sassy, Talk About, many, many other stuff. All right, so we're going to get ready to start. So Peter is watching the DVD, I am watching the Blu-ray, they are the same versions. We are both paused at the Warner Bros. Picture logo, a Warner's Communications Company. So, Peter, on my count, ready to start the movie?
Yes.
All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1, go. My PlayStation is being a little...
Yeah. Fades into that skeleton with the crossbones. Yeah. And the font that's used is something that I never saw that anywhere else.
No.
Like that sort of Goonies font. I would love to have that on my computer.
Yeah. You could probably purchase that for quite a bit of money.
Well, I would have loved it in middle school or high school, because I would have made it the header on my reports.
Oh, yes.
As somebody who used Comic Sans liberally, clearly I don't have the best taste, so it would have been an upgrade.
I've always been a Times New Roman guy myself. But...
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, you got to stick with the classics.
Yes.
This jail scene is interesting to me, where he's, you know, hanging there and all that, because I've been to that jail, believe it or not. Not as a prisoner, but as a visitor to the Oregon Film Museum.
Wow.
Which is what that is now. And... You can walk through where this whole thing was shot, as Bob Davey pretends that he hung himself.
You schmuck. What yep. I knew quite well at that time due to my Jewish grandmother that lived with us. Yes, he pretends he hung himself and gets down. Very creative, actually.
And I'm going to make the mistake of calling them by the actors' names because I have this horrible habit of doing that. But Francis, Joe Pantoliano, who is fantastic in this movie for the kind of limited role that he gets as one of the Fratelli brothers, and then Anne Ramsey, who is I can't think of anybody who would have been better than Anne Ramsey in that role.
No.
Like, crotchety, like. It's a little mix up with the let go of the handle. Oh, I don't have the handle. Open the lock. And like that's something that's like the everyday stupid stuff that is happening to these ruthless criminals that are like setting fires outside the jail.
Yeah, the only ones that I could have seen maybe is one of like the old bailiffs from Night Court. Could play the Anne Ramsey.
Oh, yeah. Perhaps.
You have to have that funny voice.
Anne Ramsey died not long after this movie came out. It was a couple of years.
Yeah. Tremendous, but, though. She was throwing mom from the train, all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I love how casual she is, just eating a cracker.
Yes.
Like a high-speed chase. You get one-way streets everywhere. The police just can't... They can't keep up with this car, which... like we're going to see it a little bit later, where Chunk is very obsessed with the ORV.
Yes.
Where, of course, now they're generally called SUVs.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like they were more rare back then. So it's like, oh, well, this car, you can outrun the Astoria Police Department with it.
God, look at the leg warmers and stuff that she wears there.
Yeah, and the mud that the football team is, like, completely muddy as poor Rosalita, the house who we're not going to meet, is in the middle of the street. Like, why is she standing in the middle of the street? I don't quite understand. They did these little gags in this movie that I really enjoy where – Mouth is watching a chase scene and he turns off the TV because his dad asked him to, and the chase goes by his house. But he thinks that something's wrong with the TV, so he hits it.
Yes. Now
little stuff like that.
Very Love 80s it. With the parachute pants and the brush in the back pocket. and the feathered hair up. Oh my God. Yes. I'm not going to say I didn't do that. Maybe I did.
Yeah.
At that age.
Well, you know, my sister played softball with a comb in her back pocket in right field. So, you know, kids, both male and female, would do that. We get a lot of good character development at the beginning where... Yeah.
They pretty much establish these, almost all the characters off the bat, like what kind of kind of kids they are. Like, you know, you got Data here, who is obviously a James Bond, you know, fan. And there's Chunk.
Chunk's spilling stuff all over himself. It's not clear to me how that thing just exploded on him like that, but I'm just willing to accept that because he's such a slob. And I don't know what Steph was doing, like lean over into a barrel and pulling out a crab.
Yeah, that was kind of it was kind of weird. Like we had no idea what she was doing when we saw this.
I know that they're by the ocean. You don't necessarily think of Astoria, Oregon as this fishing community like anybody else. There just so happens to be an ORV rally on the beach that day that the car could just mix into.
Yeah, I think that was kind of their master plan. They may be inept, but they had some master plans here, I think.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they're outrunning everybody, so they're kind of not making themselves inconspicuous there. I mean, you know, they're kind of standing out. Almost like they're I didn't get to go to the neighborhood. When I visited Astoria, Oregon, I did not go to, like, the neighborhood. This is all film, which is like a kind of hilly area for something that's so close to the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah, almost like San Francisco, I guess you could say. There's Mikey with the 80s look with the jean jacket with the jeans. This is like, I'm going to make a lot of 80s references.
You would think that this was set in Canada, given the fact that he's wearing the Canadian tuxedo. In fact, I read something that this was originally going to be set in Ohio, and I'm glad that they set it in Oregon because it makes it a little bit more unique, I think, with it being on the ocean. I mean, how could they have done that, you know, all the stuff on the beach and all that in Ohio? That would have been a little strange.
Maybe Lake Erie or something.
The relationship of Brand and Mikey is fascinating to me, and the sort of character interplay where they screw up words like, I was trying to delate myself. No, dictate myself. And how... Every single member of that family did that during the movie, where they screwed up words. Even the mom.
Yeah, and Bran corrects them all.
Yes,
he's okay. Yeah, here's with his Prince shirt on, and his Pepsi mouth.
Yeah, mouth mentioning that it's a nuclear Saturday or something, which I learned from somewhere. I don't want to drive us off track, but somebody pieced it together where there's a calendar that says October 1985 on it, and there's a newspaper that says October 23rd at some point, mm-hmm. which means that this would be Saturday, October 26th, which is the same day that Marty McFly went back in time down in Hill Valley, California.
Wow.
So a lot was going on in the movie universe that day.
Whoa, that just blew my mind.
Although not for Brand, because like my sister Mari failed his driver's test the first time.
Oh, my friend failed twice. He had a parked car. I was. Here we learn the truffle shuffle.
A thing that would be used to shame fat kids for years mm-hmm. to come. Thankfully, I was never asked to do this. I don't think I was ever as big as Chunk. Actually, now that I'm looking at him, maybe there was some about Chunk where I was a little off put by him because I was not that much smaller than him. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen some pictures of me playing Little League recently, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm built like a Jersey barrier.
I was a really skinny kid, not so much today, but so yeah, I was like a strong gust of wind would have blown me away at that age. But this is just ingenious here, their little system to open their gate.
Which I love because it all makes sense as you get into One-Eyed Willie's booby traps.
Yes.
The fact that he has experience setting up stupid little crap like that kind of comes into play a little bit as Chunk tells a story about Chunk's a bullshit artist through and through. And like Michael Jackson came over to his house to use the bathroom and he saved people and he ate his weight in Godfather's Pizza, which is the best one.
Okay, Michael Jackson didn't come to my house to use the bathroom, but his sister.
But
which sister do you think he was referring to?
All right, LaToya, I ask myself that every time you go to Janet, but I always think it's LaToya because LaToya's still Michael Jackson's sister, and who would be in Astoria, Oregon? Janet Jackson ain't going there. I love zip lines so much, but I don't understand why he doesn't make sure the coast is clear beforehand. They don't have a walkie-talkie system. This kid's so into technology, but he doesn't have walkie-talkies.
I don't think Data thinks things through so much.
No. He has a vision, but it's not always like thought through to the end, as the statue has the penis and balls.
It's my mom's favorite piece.
Wouldn't be here if it wasn't.
Shut up, mouth. Yes,
and Data is very excited about moving to Detroit in 1985, which I don't know if it actually did have the highest murder rate, but it was probably close enough.
Yeah, I think that was fairly accurate.
Yeah.
And Mikey
Stanley. Now the whole idea of this foreclosure, I tried to learn Oregon foreclosure law in the last week or so, and I'm not quite clear on how that worked, but I guess we'll have more time for that because we're meeting – the mom and the housekeeper, a very interesting pair, considering that they have a house. They have a housekeeper, even though their house is being foreclosed on, because the mom has a broken arm for some reason, which I've never been able to figure out.
Yeah. And this actress, trying to catch her name, she's been Mary Ellen Trainor. She's been in so many things. She was one of those. She was Catherine, what's her face, Turner's sister in Romancing the Stone, amongst other things.
And Lupe Ontiveros actually got nominated for an Emmy for her role on Desperate Housewives, which was not a show that I watched, but I always thought
was What's-His-Face's mother, I think. Yeah. Carlos.
Yeah, she gets nominated for an Emmy down the road. Now, I don't know if anybody else in this scene ever got nominated for an Emmy. Out of all people, it's her. Now, this bit where Mouth knows Spanish, which I guess is why you have to have the Spanish housekeeper to establish that Mouth knows Spanish, but he's using it for these bizarre ends where he's painting them as drug dealers, sex torture, S&M type people, and just freaking out this poor woman who I don't know how she got to Astoria, Oregon, but
and they put the glue on the piece.
You'll be pissing in your faces. Looks fine to me.
Yeah, so we told her not to mix up the drugs, which, you know, you always have to remember. And then an attic full of sexual torture devices, which, you know, most homes in Oregon probably have those.
Well, Mouth doesn't necessarily actually know what's up there. That might be a story that was actually told because they were told not to go up there. And this is one of my favorite lines of the whole movie that I didn't catch for about 30 years. I'd really like the house clean when they tear it down.
That goes along with, like, you know, have clean underwear on because you're going to get hit by a car.
Yes.
Theory.
I really want to know how she broke her arm. Now, I want to know how that happened.
When you get to meet Mr. Walsh, their dad, doesn't look like, you know, maybe he's one of those ones like, oh, yeah, yes. I would never have thought he has sexual torture devices up there, but yeah, makes sense now.
It's always the people you least suspect.
Yes.
So now she's clearing out with Lupe, who Chunk is staring at the penis of the statue.
Well, he's trying to hide it from the
rest. Yeah. And this is a part right here where you're going to be in the deepest shit, Ma. I don't like that language. In the edited version that I had for many years, he would say, scum, Ma. Ah. And she would still say, I don't like that language, which is a very funny edit.
What is that? Oh, shit, what?
Oh, so potato chips everywhere. Okay, it's fine. We got it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And now they can finally get down to the brass tacks of planning what they're going to do with their, quote, nuclear Saturday. the last one, apparently, that they'll have there, because even though they haven't moved any of their stuff out, I don't really know the foreclosure process all that well. But it seems like it's moving pretty fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and they look very ill prepared for this, by the way.
Yeah. Speaking of ill prepared, look at Chunk's outfit with the Hawaiian shirt and the plaid pants.
Yeah. Very, although, Chip from Dale from Chip and Dale look there.
Yeah. Although I got to say, sadly, out of all the kids there at age, I'm going to peg him at about age 12.
Yeah.
Chunk probably is dressed mostly like me at age 12. I mean, I can only make the excuse it was 1991 for so long.
Yeah, I was more, I think when I was 12, I was more Mikey, but then 13, I was more Mouth. With the members only jacket and trying to be cool. You know, I don't think Mikey's hit that yet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Mikey clearly is influenced by something in Canada, but now they can pick out new clothes because there's, like, Chunk's got, like, a pirate hat on or something up in this attic.
Yeah, and there's a pirate wheel, a ship wheel, and all that.
It's also unclear to me why Mr. Walsh has all this stuff. As Mouth is wrecking one of the paintings by sticking his tongue
Mikey,
through
come
it.
Here, give me a little kiss, make me feel like a woman.
You're ruining the painting. You're ruining my joke.
You ever think of how the Goonies actually became friends? Because they don't seem like kids that would actually necessarily get along.
No, especially Chunk. I mean, Chunk is very different from all of them.
Yeah.
And Data, you know, being of Asian descent, I mean, you know, he's the only one that you see in this movie. I mean, I think part of it is just they all live in the same neighborhood, and they're all facing the same problem, I guess.
Well, Chunk kind of sums up right there. They're all the rejects, just like us, the Goonies.
Yeah.
I guess.
I mean, there's some stuff cut out that I, like, there's a whole Goonie pledge, and there's actually a book, too, that's kind of different from the movie, but obviously I didn't read that, because why would I need to? I've seen the movie 450 times.
I actually own Goonies figures.
There
was
really?
There was a set that came out. Yeah, it's the four boys and Sloth. And they have, like, you have the little key, you have the statue, everything. They're kind of, like, just in storage and bins right now. I'm still putting shelves up. As soon as I do, though, I'll have those up and I'll put a picture up on the Facebook. Yeah, it was great. I found it, like, 15, 20 bucks a pop, like normal for figures. Now, Mikey, who wants something broken, just hand it to Chunk.
Give it to Chunk. He's actually counting it down in his hands, if you notice. And then when he breaks it, now we get a flub here where they throw off the glass, and then the glass magically reappears when they pull the map off.
Oh, that's right.
which I'll forgive them that because I point that out every single time, even if I'm watching it by myself.
Well, the biggest flub is at the end of the movie. When they mention a cutout scene.
There's more than one. Yes. I mean, there's a verbal, definitely a verbal flub that relates to something that didn't happen in mm-hmm. the canon of the movie. But yes. I guess they filmed something.
Now that Spanish knowledge is coming in handy already.
Yeah, I am impressed that, you know, I have him pegged as 12. Maybe they're 13 or 14, but I'm impressed that he can read cursive writing Spanish that's faded over 350 years old.
Yeah, and he's got to be like, what are these kids like? How, I can't remember. Like, well, my son's 13. He's in seventh grade, so these are like seventh graders. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't even take a language yet in seventh grade. Took Latin in eighth grade.
That was like first year of French for me. The map that they had there looks very authentic, and apparently the guy aged it with coffee and his own blood, which is a little gross. And Sean Astin, when they finished filming the movie, they said, "Oh, you can keep the map." And what happened was his mother threw it away. Of course, his mother is Patty Duke, which it's the worst thing Patty Duke ever did was throw. She threw away the Goonies map because she thought it was junk.
Oh, and she was in the movie business. She could have known.
I know. Let's say this is better than any Patty Duke stuff that I ever saw her in. But then again, I'm not familiar with much more than the Patty Duke show, which my dad forced me to watch when I was like 7.
Oh, well, she also did The Miracle Worker.
Yeah.
Trapped. I love Chunks. Wow.
Chunk
is like the best audience.
He is, but Chunk, and I realized this on my last viewing before this, that he's very bipolar through this movie. Like, one minute he's like, I don't want any part of your Goonie adventures, and then like 5 seconds later he's ready to take off with the rest of them. he does all that stuff. He's like, now wait a minute, Mikey, how did the map and the story get out? And so he's very skeptical, and Mikey just says, well, I asked my dad that, and he said that one of them must have got away, and he's like, yeah, I believe you, after 5 seconds. So his skepticism only goes so far.
Well, no, I think he was being sarcastic.
And now they find another frame, mm-hmm. which is
Chester Copperpot,
which coincidentally his picture is in the paper the same day FDR proposes the New Deal, which establishes that it's 1933 or whatever that he was going after this treasure.
A lot of coincidences in this movie.
Yeah. They now realize that this might be a key to something going forward. Although Copperpot said that he had the key to One-Eyed Willie and couldn't get there.
Yeah, now like, you know, they're in that balance between like, you know, could we do this and the actual cynicism.
Yep.
I don't want to go anywhere, you Goonie adventures.
yeah, Chunk's out until he's not out, which I think in part this part here is important to changing people's minds because you get, well, of course, you got to take the peace with you, Mikey. 1632, pole position. Troy's dad and the other guy, which I've always associated those coats, those style of raincoats with like just dickhead bankers for like all of my life because of this scene and those hats that they're wearing.
We know Troy, such a cheap guy.
Like, is your mommy here? No, we're actually sure she's brought out the market by Pampers for all us kids.
Brandon, is he 18? No, he can't take a legal document.
He's taking a driver's test, so I'm assuming that he's 16.
Yeah.
But I'll check the driving age for Oregon. I mean, I'm sure it's probably the same.
But he's not, but he's not 18, which is a legal adult.
Yeah, well, I think he's just taking it as a, your dad is going to need to sign this, and that's, you know, he's just taking that for them, and he'll just pass it along. Okay, let's see. The first step to, come on, what are the rules? Restricted age, 16 and a half, apparently. You can get a license in Oregon, but it's restricted, but that might... The mid-80s was very different for those kind of rules.
I mean, yeah.
Mid-90s, when I got my license, it was 16 and a half, and you're free at that point. You could drive a freaking minivan if you wanted to, full of fellow 10th graders or whatever.
Well, in New York, it was 16, and then you had a junior license. You got that, but you got your senior license at 18. But if you took driver's ed, you got it at 17, which meant like you could drive at night and drive on certain highways and that kind of thing.
So we get to a stat. Yeah, they want to foreclose on all this land to build to expand the existing golf course.
And there's Chunk with the whipped cream. Yeah. So one day I'm with my kids. I'm in my apartment with them. It was my weekend, and I had showed them the Goonies. I don't know, like it was like the night before or in the morning. So I proceed to make them breakfast, whatever, and then I get in the shower. And I'm literally about to walk in the shower, and I hear a ruckus coming from my kitchen. I quickly throw a towel on. I walk in there to find my daughter standing there with a can of whipped cream and my son with whipped cream all over his face as they try to reenact Chunk's little depression whipped cream thing here, sticking in his mouth. And I just looked at them both, and I just, what the fuck?
I've done that. I did that. I did that at that age. It's interesting that mouth has gotten wet in a sink twice in the first 20 minutes of this movie. One of those odd sort of things that just happens. Hey, Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, sang the Goonies theme.
Which they did not produce the video until 6 months after filming Wrapped. So they're not actually watching it. It's through the magic of movies that's happening.
We actually never show them watching it, like in the same shot.
Yes.
There's Brand that, still working out.
With that stretchy thing, which my sister had one of those that was kind of like that, and I don't understand what the hell the point is. Where he's just stretching it out. It's almost like he's with a giant slinky.
Well, it's like those rubber bands they have today. Those bands that you see like the wrestlers working out with backstage or whoever. So, yes.
I am impressed with how quickly they tied him up. And Chunk's just ability to just throw weight on the pile, like to keep him there.
His most favorite thing. 376 lawn mowing jobs to pay for that bike. What the hell was he charging?
Yeah, he was definitely charging under market. There's no way that those tires. I mean, if he's getting paid a dollar, who's paying $376 for tires in 1985? Especially when his house apparently is being foreclosed upon. Like, what is going on in this family here?
Very poor economic decisions here.
Yeah,
hiring a housekeeper when they can't afford their house, or just they just don't have a choice. I think the whole place is getting foreclosed.
They couldn't say no to the wraparound porch. But Mr. Walsh, he spent all of his money on the sexual torture devices that were hidden in the attic that they never got to. They were distracted by all the one-eyed Willy stuff. But there are sexual torture devices that are up there, I think. Rosalita can't get the groceries in. Yeah, I'll help you, but...
Yeah. I don't understand what the hell you're saying, but...
Yeah.
And there's my Mr. Walsh. Yeah, does that look like a guy who has sexual torture devices in an attic?
I think there's a chance. Chance looking at him. I mean, there's poor Brandy's going to make a... Now, the mom, I'll commit Hare Krishna.
It's Hare Krishna.
like mother, like son. The little character touches like that... It's part of why I love this movie. It Brand hijacking a bike.
That's Data's little sister. And the kid just stands there stopping her feet. I want my bike. I want my bike. Showing a lot of range there.
He stole a bike from about a 5 or 6 year old girl outside her house. But it does lead to some comedy coming up.
It does. Double O negative. They called Data.
This is like the overhead shot here of all the trees and the winding road. Like that is how I pictured Oregon. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I just pictured all of Oregon, like outside the cities, as being. And when I went to Astoria, I was like, I was expecting streets to look like that, and well, it really didn't, because it was pouring rain the entire time I was there, which is kind of par for the course, I think, for that climate. Now they're trying to figure out what the hell those rocks are out in the distance, which I would have loved to have seen if those actually exist. But I was driving out there from Portland, and it was a long drive to Astoria because there's not a direct highway or anything. So it was about 2.5 hours. And by the time we got there through the rain, I was just beat, like wanted to go home.
There's Troy trying to, you know, perv it up there. Catch a glimpse.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, does he think she's not wearing underwear? I don't get it exactly. Like, he's trying to see further. A poor Brand on a 6-year-old girl's bike.
Sees the cool guy who has a convertible and the girl he likes.
Yeah, there's a definite underlying class thing going on with. Of course, I'm going to call her Carrie Green because I can't remember.
Andy.
With Andy and Troy, mm-hmm. where she thinks she's supposed to be with him. I don't understand. Steph, I think, is just Andy's friend who is the truth teller, mm-hmm. who will tell her mm-hmm. when she's being dramatic. I don't know how he survives that. He's going like 45 miles an hour on a children's bike and just goes like off a cliff.
Yeah. Well, we don't know how far down or what the hill situation is like. Yeah, Chunk's just like, I've had it with pulling this fucking bike.
Yeah.
Chunk's like, he's pointing a finger or anything. This better be it. Like, he's not having it now.
Interesting note about Jeff Cohen in this movie that I learned is that he had chicken pox when they started filming, and he showed up anyway because they were afraid that they were going to replace him, and they would have probably if he had said anything. So I always look for him to see if he's scratching or if he's got signs of chicken pox. I mean, I don't notice anything really amiss.
And Mouth coming in handy again. I think that's Mouth's really only skill is the Spanish translations throughout the movie.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I guess if somebody wants to fix their hair, he's always got a comb.
Well, yeah. Oh, well, no, the dad being a plumber, I think that knowledge comes in handy as well.
Oh, yes, yes. When we get there, that is one point where what I don't understand is they say 100 paces, but they're not walking in a straight line.
No.
Like, they're just counting. Like, they're just, like, high-stepping along and skipping, as it were.
I guess, yeah.
As they now are hiding behind these sort of tractor wheels, whatever it is, behind this restaurant that's really the Fratelli's hideout, which they've estimated the 100 steps has got to lead to the restaurant.
Oh, yeah. That's always... It's getting late. And that's a summer place.
I love that line because Chunk is all of a sudden skeptical. Like, it's a summer restaurant. Why is it open in the fall? Like, what kind of 13-year-old has the kind of nuanced mind to ask questions?
I love this slap from Dana to Chunk. Drug dealers, shit! He just smacks him. He's like, and Dana knows all about, like, you know, what drug dealers wear. They wouldn't be caught dead in those rags.
He did know an awful lot about Detroit.
Yeah,
because you know he thought he was moving there, so maybe he studied up on the drug dealer scene there. They probably dropped a pot, but Chunk was right. They were gunshots.
Yeah, Chunk's right more than we'd like to give him credit for in this movie.
He's pretty street savvy for the overweight Jewish kid in kind of like coastal Oregon.
Probably not many of them.
I would not imagine that it's a high Jewish area,
nah.
Astoria, Oregon. But he is like a walking diabetes time clock because all he wants is candy bars and soda for this entire film.
Yes.
Earlier when they were getting off their bikes, he asked, does anybody have a candy bar, Baby Ruth? And that comes into play later mm-hmm. because apparently somebody gives him a Baby Ruth, but he doesn't eat it. He just puts it away because he knows that he'll want more food later.
Yeah. And Mikey, that's Mikey's at least third puff on that inhaler right now. And Chunk sees bullet holes in an ORV.
As a child who had asthma problems when I was about 8 to 11 was when it was most acute, and it was around the time that I was watching this movie the most, I always saw Mikey's problem as like, well, at least my thing isn't as severe as this kid. Like, I don't have to take 3 puffs an hour like him. They still believe that it's a restaurant. As they're looking around, as there's a man screaming at somebody.
Now, this guy comes out with this apron. I'm going to be terrified. But he's got a nice scarf.
And I think he has corpse handling gloves on, actually. Now, I'm not an undertaker. Oh, no, he doesn't have gloves on. But he's certainly got a lot of protective wear as they're talking to each other in Italian.
Which is not far from Spanish, so I'm Mouse should know a little bit about what's going on. They're both Latin root languages.
He's too busy shitting his pants to know any better what's going on. But they're gonna get food apparently. They want food or water. Well, except Mouth is going to get them into a little bit of trouble here, where he wants veal scallopini.
Fettuccine Alfredo. A bottle of the fettuccine, 1981.
But all we serve here is tongue. And this is definitely cut out on the Disney Channel version.
Yeah,
they
do
not
so.
Show any knife play on the Disney Channel.
Nah. Your boys like tongue? No. No, I've had tongue before. It's not bad.
It's really weird how the Fratellis are playing it off like this. Yes, this is a restaurant. Instead of telling these kids to scram, probably because they know if they kill four kids, there's going to be an awful lot of heat on them.
After they've just killed two FBI agents.
Well, yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound, you know?
Yeah. Nobody's now, listening to poor Chunk over here.
Well, Chunk's units of measurement is great because bullet holes the size of matzo ball.
Yes.
<Ooh. laughs> Never thought to compare that. Mikey does not know that Ann Ramsey is a woman, which is kind of a mistake there. But 3 out of 4 ain't bad.
Mikey, this isn't a place to kind of go to the bathroom in. Why not? So now she's like upset that, you know, people wouldn't want to go pee in this restaurant. And then Chunk sees him pulling a body by. And yep. There is some scary looking water there, by the way.
Hey, Mikey, got to go to the bathroom. For anybody who was named Michael in my elementary school in the late 80s, you would get something like that if, you know, when the class was going to the bathroom. And as he's going down the stairs to the bathroom, my elementary school, at least in the third grade, they renovated it by the time I got to fourth grade. There was an old building and a new building. In the old building, the stairs down to the bathroom looked very much like the Goonies stairs down to the underground lair where we meet, or Mikey meets Slaw, who is chained to the wall.
Played by John Matuszak.
Yep.
Former number one overall pick, actually. I believe. My aunt actually went to college with him.
Oh, really?
She went to the University of Tampa. Amongst her classmates were John Matuszak, Freddie Solomon, Lou Piniella, and Paul Orndorff.
Oh, so yeah, the University of Tampa.
Mm-hmm. Ninth class of 72. I was right before I was born, she graduated, my Aunt Betty.
Now, Jake Fratelli is singing opera to Sloth to kind of keep him calm.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, the mouse trap goes off on Mikey's ass.
Oof.
The whole singing opera to Sloth was Robert Davi's idea contribution to the film, because he's actually a trained opera singer, and he released an album in the last 10 years. I heard him promoting it on a podcast years ago, and I thought, oh, that's neat, the guy who was singing in the Goonies is actually a singer. But yeah, he was a singer at this time, and he threw that in as sort of a character device.
Mikey helps out Sloth with the food, but gives a glimpse and scares the shit out of him.
Rightfully so, I might add. They did a hell of a job with that makeup, mm-hmm. which apparently took 5 hours for them to apply each time. So if you know, you couldn't get them wet or anything, which I guess one day he got wet, probably when they get to the pirate ship and. So they had to delay filming for a day because his makeup got all screwed up.
And Bran finally catches up with them. Ann Ramsey has a great line that most parents will say at one time or another. Kids suck.
She can't say FTK because they timed the swears in this movie very, very well to allow for easy editing for the most part.
My God, I never really noticed Bran's face in this scene right now. Yeah, he took a bad spill there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's just something I never really thought to look for before. He falls off a cliff going 45 miles an hour on a children's bike where there's probably not a lot of cushion on the way down.
Now, but, That's a kind of gamer. That's kind of a big. That's a Cherokee. They could have fit both bodies in there, I think. I mean, the measurement unit. People's measuring skills are not very good in this movie.
I think. Well, yeah, it's. You know, that's a valid point. Why didn't they try to dispose of both bodies at the same time? I think that they didn't want to put them in the same place.
Yeah, that could have been true.
You want to spread them out, come back, get the other one, which they eventually do, mm-hmm. and maybe drive to the other side of town. I'm thinking good. I kind of return to Goodfellas on that sort of thing for your body burying strategy.
You take Hendry, I got a wing here. Hendry,
You think I never dug a grave before?
And the girls ditched Troy for finally for his pervertedness.
Well, yeah, that is probably for the best. I mean, mm-hmm. Steph was just there as a third wheel, so she probably talked Andy into doing that. But he was not tilting the mirror to look down her shirt, as she says. It was to look up her dress. Which I don't get that line. Now you got to get Chunk mad so you can get the door open. So. Again, it's bipolar Chunk. So I got naked pictures of your mom. Want to buy them? I think it's strange that you're offering naked pictures of the kid's mom back to him for purchase. That is strange.
Hopefully, Chunk parlayed that ability to knock that door down to like a high school football career later on.
For some reason, I don't think that stocky Jewish kid ended up having a storied career as an offensive tackle for Astoria High.
The girls just get freaked out with the fish head.
To be fair to them, that was a pretty freaky looking fish head.
If you just walk and you don't like, no. My God, it was disgusting. It almost killed us. Typical.
I mean, Andy's just looking for any reason to be next to Bran because that's what she wants. But the underlying class warfare of Astoria had her torn, I think. she wants to be with this roughneck. She doesn't want to be with Troy.
Yeah, and Steph is just making faces all over the corner.
Yeah, she doesn't want to be there the entire time. Like, she wants out, like, right away.
Chuck, I hope that was your stomach. Chuck, like, would have some serious gastroenteritis issues there.
That would not surprise me with his early onset diabetes. Not like, hey guys, come on down to the basement and see this freak that I ran away from earlier.
It sounds like Kong. Oh my God!
they did a great job filming this. Just to make it really ominous and scary. I mean, Sloth, you know, scared the crap out of me until probably about my 12th viewing of this, about 1987.
Yeah, but you know what? They make Sloth fair. They humanize him very fast, like almost childlike.
Yeah,
you know, very quickly. Once they bond over the baby Ruth, you know, this is even scarier than the room upstairs. Jesus,
what a big pig pile there. Perfect time for a makeout session, yeah, too. But, like, hey, this is the part. We're going to start making out in front of your younger brother and all of his friends.
I can't even look. Yeah, Steph looks like a watcher.
Yeah.
I can't even look. She's full of shit. I don't believe that.
Yeah. Oh, Martha Plimpton. Still working. I saw her on the show Brockmire recently.
Oh, yeah, and she had that other show, I think, whatever, some kind of sitcom, she was the mom. You know, Cary Grant doesn't do much outside of this and Lucas, where she was starring with the other Corey.
Yes. Yeah, she hit for the Corey cycle all of her big films.
Mm-hmm. And Mikey's just so... Like,
Why would I look at the fireplace when I could just go through this cement thing below us, like... Very, very dumb. He like Data, is not necessarily thinking that. Well, now you got to think, get Chunk mad, and things will happen. Like knocking over the water cooler.
Here's like Chunk's healthiest choice. He was drinking water.
That is true. Yes, but he was clearly dehydrated from.
I'm getting babysitting, so I'm not getting paid.
But because he knocks over the water cooler, there's a benefit because they're like, It sounds like my grandfather taking a leak, but they realize that there's a drain of some kind in the floor, and now, oh yeah, okay, the fireplace. come on, you're in the clouds and we are in a basement. That's why Andy needed the friend there, Steph, to set her straight, because her head was in the clouds.
Mikey's getting a little vindication here.
Yes.
They flipped that fake floor right there. Now, this is why Bran comes in handy. He's got that strength that they don't have.
Yeah, they would have had big problems trying to do a lot of the stuff. Like, I'm not sure. Well, that floor did give kind of easily.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's holding up that well, as Data thinks he's making counterfeit money in one of the stupidest parts of the movie. Because here you have this kid who's wise enough, smart enough to make all these little devices, but yet he thinks you could make counterfeit money on white sheets of paper and one-sided. Like, it's one-sided bills. And they're uncut, and there are margins. Which, like, even the Fratellis, I mean, I don't know. Maybe the Secret Service is investigating them. Like, Bran sniffs this out in about 5 seconds. And I'm not sure he's the brightest bulb in the world.
And how Andy knows what the punishment is for counterfeiting off the top of her head right there.
Well, there's probably somebody in the rich scene of Astoria that she's been associated with that it probably got sent up the river for it.
Of course, they save the picture, the paper with their picture on it.
Well, you know, I'm going to write that off to character development. And speaking of character development, Chunk once again is hungry, and he smells ice.
More the early onset diabetes, dude.
Like, there's a whole... Can somebody explain to me why they have a whole freezer of ice cream? Like, that much ice cream? There are three people living there. Now, I know that there's a restaurant, but that they're serving all these Swenson ice cream desserts, like,
and Wonder Bread in the freezer. That's not... Who puts Wonder Bread in a freezer?
I mean, I guess you can freeze bread, but...
I wonder if Swenson's a real brand, or was a real brand.
It was of ice cream. I think it was, yeah. And he really loved the chocolate eruption.
Mississippi mud.
Chocolate eruption.
Great. Like, who
for ice cream? Like, do they have chocolate eruption?
I never heard of grape ice cream before.
No, that's not something you see very often.
As my dog, you can hear him in the background.
Now the Fratellis are upstairs, and they've gotten pizza. And the interplay between Francis and Jake is just asking for a slice of pizza. He wants a slice of pepperoni, so he throws a thing and hits Francis in the back of the head, who then throws a slice of pizza at him, and they pull guns on him.
Almost shot over there.
And wow. Anne Ramsey was instructed, apparently, to hit Robert Davi as hard as she could with those slaps by the director. So
by Richard Donner, who also directed Superman. And they have poor Chunk gets locked in there with a dead body.
Yes. Which, I think he's less freaked out by the dead body and more freaked out by the fact that he's surrounded by all this ice cream and he doesn't have a spoon. Because he doesn't get his hands on a spoon for a while yet.
Yeah.
He only gets it for about 3 seconds.
Yeah, and they have to decide, we got to go down wherever that fucking hole leads. We can't. Those are wanted criminals up there with weapons.
Guns.
And this stiff is not listening to a Chunk.
Yeah.
Yes, the older brother goes first. How novel. You're still fighting about the pepperoni pizza.
Like the bickering between them, that I do like how they're not presented as this united front. They all hate each other, which goes into how despicable characters they are. It's like they're all terrible people, but they're all terrible to each other as well. And poor Chunk gets separated from his friends. He gets the hardest job out of all of them because he's off by himself. Well, right now he's locked in a freezer, and they're basically like, "Where's Chunk?" Like, he's up there somewhere. he's in the freezer. Now the Fratellis realize that something is amiss because the cooler is broken.
Go check your brother.
Could have been a tremor, Ma.
I'll show you a tremor. Wow, kill, man.
Slaps him again. As hard as she can.
And take a change from the zoo.
I'm not getting any more from the zoo. Chunk sneezes, and Ramsay, Mama Fratelli, says Gesundheit, thinking that it was one of the brothers who said it, who sneezed. And Chunk is now free. But because the rest of them don't really like Chunk, they're like, go get the police. We got it from here. We would rather be trapped underground with murderous criminals chasing us than to hang out with you for the next hour.
And out of all the people you put your rescue plans in, Chunk is the one. And they see a window that Chunk reveals by accident.
Well, actually, when we get to that point, I think Chunk did a pretty good job when he got captured for reasons that I'll get into when the Fratellis get a hold of him. And of course, he didn't break the chains because we saw him tied up earlier. Now Steph's going to have her glasses broken because somehow they fall off her face, which doesn't make much sense to me.
Nah, we never actually see it fall off.
Yeah. Why are you carrying your glasses? I mean, just wear them. They're not going to fall off your face. Now we get some infighting between Bran and Mikey, because even though this is Mikey's operation and Bran is trying to get them to not go, he's now decided we're in so far that might as well take charge.
The bully blinders here.
Bully blinders.
And they can't see.
When I watched this as a kid, I always thought he said bullet blinders, and I'm like, that doesn't even make any sense. And then, you know, probably viewing number 19, I go, oh, bully blinders. Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, and Data, of course, his inventions only work so far.
Yep.
I'm not afraid of dark. I love it, but I hate nature.
lot of, again, deluding characters trying to delude themselves into a way of thinking. Now, he can see that it's an SUV, but he does not recognize it as the same SUV with the bullet holes in it.
Well, because they're in the back, yeah.
Yeah. He can't say.
He's disgusted. Have you ever heard of the Fratellis?
I could describe all three of them.
And then the light goes on. And he starts
That's a great shot with him, with Jake in the rearview mirror where you can see him, and then he starts just singing to him.
Very
as Francis grabs him.
He starts singing. I think he's singing the prayer before or after meals. Baruch Atai, because anyway, I went to the camp I attended as a kid was actually a Jewish camp. It was that Westchester Hebrew High School, and they kept kosher and all that stuff, and they made you wear your head covered. So for several summers, I had to listen to the prayer before and after meals in Hebrew, so I kind of retained some of it.
Now that you point that out, it's amazing how Jake Fratelli identifies Chunk as Jewish so quickly.
Yes.
And is able to just turn it on to that song. I guess that's the new thing that I've learned with this viewing is apparently Jake Fratelli could spot a Jew at 30 paces. I don't know what kind of skill that is.
And here's, Mouth's plumber knowledge coming in handy, I guess.
Yeah, just bang on the pipes to try and get somebody to acknowledge that somebody is stuck underground. I don't know why that pipe is so loose, but one of the great characters in movie history is coming up here. I could be talking about Tennis Guy, but I like the friend who is just nonplussed by the entire thing and barely acts.
He doesn't even react to his buddy getting knocked out by a water fountain.
But that is a runner-up to one of the greatest characters in movie history. Not the guy who's got the soap on a rope, but he's billed as Man in Shower Number One, the guy with the eye patch.
Yes.
Who, like a random guy with an eye patch in the shower scene.
At a country club.
Yeah, all balding white guys. And now Troy sitting down in the bathroom reading Guns and Ammo. which I tend to think that he was probably going to be reading Playboy, but they couldn't get that through and keep the movie PG-13 or whatever. So Guns and Ammo will have to do, I guess.
Yeah. It's actually PG.
Oh, it is PG.
Yeah. I don't think PG-13 was out yet. It was around then when it came out. Because that's only been around since the mid-80s, that rating.
The first PG-13 movie was Red Dawn, I think. And I've always been under the impression that this is PG-13. Maybe I should just grab the box and... Oh, no, it is PG, which is... I don't know. They don't say the F word.
Yeah, which you can say once without referring to the act.
Yes.
And here comes the great interrogation scene with Chunk.
I can't operate a blender at all without thinking about this scene. The Chunk being interrogated... And I alluded to this earlier. He does a tremendous job here because he knows he's eventually going to have to give up the store. But he stalls so long that he gives his friends time, at least. He at least buys them time. Like, tell us everything. So now Chunk has decided to confess to every bad thing that he has ever done in his life.
Okay, I'll talk.
He did it on his history exam. In fourth grade, he stole his Uncle Baxter's toupee and glued it on his face when he played Moses in his Hebrew school play. In fifth grade, I pushed my sister Edith down the stairs, and I blamed it on the dog.
Chunk's just like having his, like, you know, final confession, I think. That's what it is, confessing all of his sins.
Yeah, it's a very Catholic moment for him. When they cut back to him, it's the cutbacks, like, yeah, we see the Goonies underground making their way through the cave, but when they cut back to Chunk, those are some of the best parts of this whole movie.
There's Andy obviously losing your shit right now.
I got to admit, Andy, one of my least favorite characters in this whole movie, because I do not think much of Kerry Green as an actress for her performance in this movie. Maybe Lucas was a little better. It's been years since I've seen that movie. Mm-hmm. It's probably on VHS the last time I saw that. But I don't know. I guess her acting all hysterical as they encountered the skeleton.
Well, you need a pretty girl in there, so, you know.
Now, here's that Chunk purpose. Again. And the Fratellis don't know what to do with him as they're confessing. He's confessing to how he got thrown out of fat camp. And they're like, Francis. What is going on here? What is wrong with this child?
And here's Mikey channeling his inner One-Eyed Willie with another hit on the asthma inhaler.
Well, One-Eyed Willie, as we get closer to the end here, we'll certainly have to discuss the dual implications of the name One-Eyed Willie. Because, you know, that could be a term for something else. But the pirate had one eye legitimately. Yeah. But to call him One-Eye Willie, well, you know, they're certainly getting at something.
Some entendres there. He went in. So, he never came back out. But he was expert. What about us? We're not experts.
So Data, for all of his knowledge of technology, he'd make a hell of a coroner. Because he identified this guy who died 50 years ago as Chester Copperpot immediately.
Yeah.
Of course, having the wallet there helps.
He's also very self-aware. He's not an expert.
Yes.
Mouth, get his wallet. I love the... finds a Lou Gehrig card. What do you think that card's worth now today?
I actually looked up that question because I know he finds a card. Right now, it's worth $275,000.
Wow.
Now, back in the mid-80s, you know, baseball cards were hot. So I'd say that it was probably worth at least $85,000, you know, if you count for inflation. I mean... Maybe could have saved the house.
Yeah, I would have put that sucker right in my pocket and protected it as much as I could. Because I was into baseball cards at that age.
Yeah, I mean, it was huge. And then it got so overproduced by about 1988, 89 that all the cards were worthless because there was a trillion of them.
Yeah, it just flooded the market. I'm saying booby traps. That's what I said. Poor Data. Nobody can understand what he says half the time.
I want to bring up the R word here. Maybe there's some underlying racism with him, but I never really think about that when I'm watching this movie. I mean, you got to think that, you know, how many we don't see another person of Asian descent in this movie other than his parents at the very end. So who knows, you know, what, you know, how much they would hear an Asian accent, you know, Mikey and the rest of them. It might only be him.
Mikey picks up another important trinket that will come in handy shortly. And of course, sets off another booby trap.
Like, he knows that the whole thing is booby trapped to death, but I think he also instinctively understands, with his knowledge of setting up booby traps and all at home, that he has to set these off in order to get to the next step.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, these stones, which, by the way, how did One-Eyed Willie get all of them set up? Well, he apparently had the whole crew of people do it, mm-hmm. and then he killed all of them. But, you know, we'll get to that in due time.
And this is what does in Chester Copperpot, who set one of them off, but not all of them, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know. Some sort of sensor device? Mikey wants to go and get the the lantern, which is of the utmost importance at this point.
Yeah, how do you only set off just that one, and yet every other one around it was not set off?
Perhaps that there was a different booby trap that only set up the one, and then there was a second booby trap to set off the others.
Could be. That was one special booby trap.
Now I'm feeling very defensive, like I have to defend booby. Like, how dare you point out this flaw in this movie that I've pointed out 35 flaws in, but yet still love?
Mm-hmm. We mentioned earlier, I have Back to the Future on an upcoming episode, and that's as close to a perfect movie as you can get, but there are flaws in that one as well, which I'll discuss on that episode. But, yeah, this is the 80s, though.
I mean, yeah.
That's really the only way to say it. Now, all these bats come out. Now, Steph is the best. She's just sitting there with her fingers crossed. Rabies! Rabies!
Rabies!
In my hair. And there's Mal trying to, like, tell him to sit.
Mouth is almost laughing at what's going on. And, oh, now we cut back to Chunk. The worst thing he ever did. Mixed up the fake puke at home, and I went to the movie theater, hid the puke in my jacket. The balcony. Now Jake's into it. He's into the story because he's smiling as Chunk is relaying this.
Francis' face.
The other two are just like, but Jake is like, I want to adopt him, like, right now.
The only people start getting, yeah, Jake is loving this.
Throwing up all over each other. I'm starting to like this kid, Ma.
I'm starting to like this kid, Ma. Hit puree!
No.
And you can see Jake's kind of like, yeah, he's like, I'm doing it, but I'm not wanting to do it.
Yeah, I want to play the violin. But luckily, he gets saved because Brandon moved that rock, freeing the bats, and the bats flew through the whole thing, and now they're coming up, and Francis is saving his hair by, yeah, there's Jake with the crossed fingers.
Yeah, it's in Chunk screaming the warning. If we keep going far down, we'll reach China. Maybe I could go see my aunt or something. I never heard that line.
I don't think I could hear that. Watching this with subtitles, I don't think I ever have before. So I am seeing this in a different way
I've noticed doing these shows. You actually pick up a lot more things that you'd never noticed before because you're not listening, I guess. I don't know. And then they get in the wishing well.
Which they don't recognize right away for some reason. They think for a second that this is the rich stuff, which until they see that it's a bunch of pennies and nickels. That,
that you know, post-dates One-Eyed Willie by about 300-something years.
Yes. And the fact that they don't know the well system in their town, I mean, granted, maybe I was just a nerdy child, but, you know, or the fact that I grew up in Woburn and we had poisoned wells that led to that movie, A Civil Action, but maybe that's why I was hyper aware of wells. As Mouth reading off the coins, or who's on the coins, Martin Sheen.
Well, he played Kennedy once.
There was a miniseries in 1983 that had Martin Sheen as Kennedy. Not the last time, of course, that he would play a president.
No.
Fictional or real, I guess.
I never watched West Wing.
Finally, they realize that it's not gold.
It's the old Moss Garden wishing well.
should have been able to figure out. Now, in a case of very good timing, who is at the top of the well, we're going to see in a second, as Steph is now making an appeal to their conscience.
The moral compass.
There's a lot of great little speeches in this, and Mouth like, this is my dream, my wish, and it didn't come true, so I'm taking it back. I'm taking them all back. So he's basically just going to rob the joint of everything. Yeah. But that's only the second best speech in this whole scene in the well, the bottom. Like, well, what does this have to do with the map?
This well isn't here. And now they're eating the ice cream. And poor Chunk, this is like the worst. This is probably more terrifying to him than the blender was, actually. Because they're eating the ice cream in front of him.
Jake's eating it with his fingers. Watching that through 2020 eyes, I'm like, come on, dude, that's gross, even if you have washed your hands.
What's that, Crack Jack prize?
But Chunk's okay with this because now he can sneak down and eat a little bit of ice cream because his blood sugar is a little low at this point. And he's got a spoon. Like,
he tries to get that last lick of it. And poor Jake. Jake basically did a heel turn on him. Here's Andy and his best
friend. Nope.
Troy and his douchey friends.
Right. This is the only time we meet the douchey friends, yeah, who are definitely, they are, this was the outsiders, they are the socias.
Yes, this is the socias.
Oh.
I think I would have the same reaction if I threw a quarry in a well and it came back to me. Hey,
that's
Troy.
From the bottom of a well, to get
shot
it up there like that, to have it bounce? Yeah. It's a one in a million shot, Doc. One in a million.
What are you doing? Well, don't ask me stupid questions.
The 1980s were the most popular time to be stuck at the bottom of a well. Just ask baby Jessica.
Yes.
Some 4 years later, I think it was. Now Chunk and Chunk's going to get tied up in the room with Sloth, which I like the little conversation, the little back and forth. Like, if you get out, I'm going to break your legs.
Is that too tight? He goes, yes, it is. You dick. Going to mess up your eyes.
luckily, Chunk has a lot of middle-aged Jewish man in him, even at a very young age.
Looks like Francis is closer with Sloth than Jake is.
I think Francis is more willing to keep a respectful distance because Jake's up on his face singing all the time.
Oh, and here's the first shot of Sloth.
The eyes are just different levels, and
yeah,
the mouth, teeth. I mean, it's an incredible makeup job by whoever did that. Chunk just
laughing.
Out.
Yeah, I would have been like, what the fuck is happening? And the Fratellis are like, are we going to get down there?
You go first, Jake. Go! Pulls a gun on him.
Mama Fratelli, she's a very caring, loving mother.
Yes. They operate as a tight family unit that just happens to pull guns on each other several times through this movie.
I'm sure my mother wanted to pull a gun when I got out of line a few times. I'll shock her.
Now, Mikey, it's now time for Mikey's dramatic speech at the bottom of the well, where he yells Chester Copperpot a couple times at the beginning. Like, we've come this far. He was a pro. He never made it this far. Chester Copperpot was a pro. He never made it this far. We've got a chance. Maybe Chunk got to the police. Maybe Chunk is dead.
that like really hit me because I was like, I can't imagine Chunk dying. Don't say that.
Yeah.
I'm not a goonie. I want to go home.
Yeah, Andy definitely having a crisis here because, as I said, she wants to be with Bran because that's the kind of man she wants to be with. But she is with Troy earlier because that's her class, that's her social status, so that's who she thinks she's supposed to be with.
Yeah.
So she's following the social order rather than her heart.
Yes, so I'm the head cheerleader. You know, he's obviously on the football team, so they got to – it's kind of meant to be.
It's their time. It's their time up there. Right now, it's our time. It's our time down here. It's all over the second we go up Troy's bucket. The disgusted way in which he says Troy's bucket.
The one person in town that you wouldn't want up at the top of the well when you're stuck down there. Maybe Troy's father, maybe the only other one, but Troy, you know. Or the Fratellis.
I think Troy's father would actually have an interest in getting those kids up, because dead kids means a life insurance payment, and maybe they're able to keep the house. Who knows?
That's
I know
true.
It's gotten very dark by me suggesting that, but that is some cold-blooded shit of Andy to bring to send the jacket up. When she was willing to come up the thing like a minute ago, and now she's like giving back the varsity sweater jacket to Troy. I love how those two friends just sort of back off and give him space.
And there's a pre-Food Network cooking show that Sloth is watching.
Yeah, you know, Sloth would be in a better place now if he could. They could just put on Guy Fieri 23 hours a day. He could watch guys grocery games. He'd be in heaven.
And there's Chunk sees his opening.
There's the baby Ruth.
He's like, oh, the guy likes chocolate. I just happen to have chocolate.
Yeah.
And this is the
chuck it to you. I'm going to hit you in the head.
It's like, ah! This is the second major movie appearance by Baby Ruth, by the way. The first was everybody knows is in Caddyshack, and it has quite a different effect on the characters in the movie, especially Spalding.
Baby Ruth was not. I think they were dying to get back into motion pictures after the way it was portrayed in Caddyshack as being roughly equivalent to feces in terms of appearance.
I mean, you know, Carl still eats it.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
It's chlorine on it, but who cares?
Nope. And Data's booby traps.
Yeah, he was very smart in that regard to kind of set that up. And yeah, there's... you can see it's a better view of the rock on Copper Pot as they go through the wallet, as Jake's like, ah, oh, the kids must have stole the money.
Clean them out, right?
Right before they ate them.
I think the kids rolled them.
Yeah. Well, they don't know Chester Copper Pot at all, so for all they know, but they should be able to tell from the decomposed skeleton. I mean, clearly they have experience with death.
Oh, yeah, but I don't think they know the lore. They think they just follow... You know, they know there's treasure that these kids are after.
Yeah.
Sloth, Chunk.
Chunk thinks he's going to die right now.
And you notice the t-shirt that Sloth is wearing right now.
It is a Raiders shirt, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
To Mr. Matuzak's team. And the sharing of the Baby Ruth takes place here. Is this where you said he's very Jewish father right here?
Yeah.
Would you just have some of the candy? More of like a Jewish grandmother. Like, have some of the candy ball. Why don't you? You got to eat something. Get your sugar up. Man, you smell like Phys Ed.
Now we're back to the well when they're trying to figure out, like, they're stalling too much at the bottom of this freaking well.
And I don't know if they can drive very quickly.
To go. Because they need to move along. Maybe they didn't hear Chunk warn them, but they have to figure that eventually somebody's going to be after them. It's now Mikey has found triple stones, which for some reason he thinks is like basically the last thing. Bran's just fed up with this shit. Like, I could have gone up the well.
A little sister wouldn't have done this shit.
Yeah. Now we get a mistake here where he puts the skull in the bones, and now all of a sudden when he goes to turn it, it becomes a different thing.
Counterclockwise.
Where there's like a wheel there all of a sudden, which is fine. I'm willing to forgive that.
But thank God it was Data the one that gets affected right here.
It is interesting because I think they almost recognize what's going to happen. They're pointing to like move out of the way, But the funny thing is, Data falling, he's the best person that could have possibly have fallen because he's the only one who has that stupid attachment where he can latch on. It's like a bungee cord.
Yeah. Oof, that would have not ended well for anybody else.
No. And he, and the best part is, they can't get to where they're going without unleashing that booby trap because now they have to go down lower and now there's like another tunnel, I think, that they have to go through.
And that was the Pinchers of Peril.
Yes. As Chunk is now, this is the boy cried wolf scene because Chunk has played too many pranks on this poor sheriff over the years who kind of resembles Richard Lewis, but is not Richard Lewis.
I've seen this guy in like one other thing. He was on First and 10. I don't know if you ever watched that HBO show.
No.
Yeah, he was on, he was kind of a jerk on it. And the way, now I always say that too, whenever I go like to out for ice cream and I see a certain flavor, I will go Rocky Road.
The prank about the creatures that multiply when you throw water on them is a, definitely a nod to Gremlins, because yes. I think it has the same director.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Spielberg connection, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sloth is just like... Chunk is the voice of reason. When does that ever happen?
Well, I may not have seen Goonies in the theater. I did see Gremlins in the theater, and it actually scared me, even though it's not a horror film.
Well, it kind of is.
I was like five, so... That's my excuse.
I still have to watch that with my kids. It's been a while since I watched that all the way. Gremlins 2 is just, that's just ridiculous.
Just fast forward through the Phoebe Cates and why she hates Christmas. that whole part of it. Because that grinds the movie to a halt for like 4 minutes.
This is a boys' room. This is a women's room. This is a men's room.
Well, at least this is adding a touch of realism to the movie. Which is, you know, this unbelievable fantasy, but the realism of, yes, they do have to go to the bathroom at some point.
Yeah.
And they're going to do it, like, during one of the scenes.
And Chunk recognizes Mikey's path of destruction. Sloth.
Somehow resets the pipes in, like, the wrong area and causes a car crash up at the up at street level.
And Andy, again, still wants a little bit of brand here. Mm-hmm.
Like, she wants it. I mean, she's, I don't want to say that she's, like, on the go team, but, you know, she's willing to just make out with the first thing that she finds, which in this case is going to be Mikey.
Yes.
Which she does not realize because it's so dark there. And... Eventually, I think she makes the excuse of, I think Brand was standing in a hole.
And when did he get braces all of a sudden?
Yeah.
And there's Steph, who's just like, I'm not telling her. Steph's very evil. I mean, come on, who among us probably would have told her? Who's going to ruin this kid's moment?
Yeah. Yeah, this is probably his first kiss with his... brother's love interest in a cave underneath the city
while they're running for their life and trying to save their houses.
But this is the part where I really take issue with what the Goonies are doing, because they're just taking too long here. Like, they gotta know that they're being chased after. I mean, you can't just dilly-dally around. I mean, and also, how did they wash their hands after going to the bathroom?
Wait a second.
I would like to know.
Here's another issue I have. Back when they're in the well, right? And Steph says she can't see anything without her glasses, but yet she can clearly denote President Kennedy on a coin.
Ooh. Although maybe she recognized it just on the basis of a half dollar being kind of a unique size relative to other coins.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
Again, me defending what is probably an obvious flaw in the picture. Like, no. Now, there's Andy again. She's like making the nod noise, like, hey, let's go fuck in the little boys' room.
Like, no, he's like, they're here, you asshole.
Which, they're here. It made me think of Poltergeist for some reason.
Another Spielberg movie there.
Is this movie just made to just set up all callbacks to other Spielberg films? I I mean, even Brand with the bike,
yeah,
flying off.
Yeah, and like when you were talking about the forest, I was like, you know, E.T. has that forest scene.
Yeah, Spielberg's fingerprints are all over this picture. So now they let the Fratellis get close, so now they got to run.
And Mama Fratelli is snorting. You can literally hear her snorting.
Yes. I think Mama Fratelli is the kind of person, I don't know her personally, but she could have benefited from one of those CPAP machines.
Probably,
I think.
Yeah.
Help her sleep, I think.
She's got lovely pearls, though.
I'm wondering who she fathered, who was the father of these children that she had.
Yeah.
I really don't want to think about that too much. That's kind of a scary road. Data.
Basically, who would bang Data Mama Fratelli? You don't want to think about that?
No, I really don't. May Aunt Ramsey rest in peace. slick shoes. He's so proud of himself, like he's just gonna stand there and smile. Hey, yeah. Remember me? We just want to get out of here.
Data gives him the F you with the, I don't even know what that hand gesture is called. With your arm and the, as I on a audio podcast, I do it as into my microphone, like with Data thinks he only has flares in there. And thank God for Data.
Now the Fratellis are trying to get across the thing, and the slick shoes actually paid off.
That was almost a shooting star press there. Okay. No.
He flipped over good. Although when Jake falls in just a minute trying to cross, that one looks legitimately painful.
Yeah.
It hurts me every time I see it.
Jake should get hazard pay in this one. I think he probably gets messed up the most of anybody.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's slow.
Oh, that look, yeah.
And he just drops. He just goes right on his nuts. He belvederes like himself like nobody's business. Like one of his testicles probably exploded. But, yeah, he's going to press on because he's a gamer.
And now we get Andy's justification for being in this movie.
Yes, so we have this 350-year-old piano that's made out of skeleton pieces that somehow is still together and is still in tune. In tune enough for it to recognize, you know, A flat, B flat, all the notes somehow. And Andy is kind of proving herself, I think, the most useless, because I think this is like a best out of seven series where, like, she's got to get four of them, but, like, seven total notes. And it always kind of scares me. Although, as we're going to see, well, she wins game one here. But there's a part in this series coming up that annoys me to no hell, like, to all hell of what one of the Goonies actually does during it, because the Fratellis are closing in and they have nothing necessarily in their way once they come up from the water. And Andy, I don't know what her piano lesson history is at this point, but
part of the floor goes away and we almost lose mouth.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe they should get the idea of stand in close because, you know, parts of the floor are going to just fall. Data's running lookout. I don't think that's the best idea because I think Brandon should be running lookout because he's the only one who stands a chance physically against them. Yeah. Even if Data has all the little tricks built up, he's a little dude.
Yeah.
Like, why is Brandon standing next to his... I mean, you know, look, I know he wants to finger blast Andy after all this is done, but come on. I mean, you want to get to that point. Like, you don't want these guys to, you know, come down and shoot him in the head.
And speaking of Brandon, he almost falls down.
He starts leaning before the floor falls. That part really annoys me.
Oh, he oversold.
Pretty mistake in his first feature film.
Goonies always make mistakes. Don't make any more.
I guess she's down 3-2 with the series at this point or something. And somehow they got it jerry-rigged where it'll open a little bit more with each one as Data thinks that now all of a sudden everything's clear. But they accidentally hit the glove, which knocks out Jake Fratelli. Okay, this is the part that annoys me. He just charges into them and, like, it causes her to hit the wrong note. Like, what a moron he is. Like, you only get a limited number of bad notes, and he just crashes in for the third bad note, and they got one left. So I guess it was 2-2 or something earlier.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think they're down. I think their back's against the wall here.
Good dad joke by Mikey there. Is it A sharp or B flat? Well, if you get the wrong note, we'll all be flat.
No, they probably could have tried to squeeze in before it came down.
It would have been hard given that a lot of the floor had fallen out behind.
Yeah.
What I wondered at this point is why did they use the dynamite to blow up the bridge behind them? But as we learn later, they didn't know that it was dynamite.
Yeah.
They thought it was candles.
Now this looks like fun, actually, this water slide here that they end up doing.
It does. It really does, except for the fact that you're going to see Mouth and Steph way too close to each other. In no water park would they allow two kids to go down that close. You got to wait for the kid to get by the little line there that, like, the kid making $4 an hour. So, all right, you can go.
Yes.
You can go.
I go to water park at least once or twice this summer with my season pass for Six Flags, and that is just exhausting. And also the rules, too. Yeah, they just keep catching up with each other, and they're flubbing around and flailing.
Yeah, and it's not like it's, you know, a sanitized water slide like at, you know, a Six Flags or whatever. There's like spikes in there too that they have to duck under,
and they all come out different holes somehow.
Yeah, that is interesting. How is it like a mini golf course? Like the ball, that they get directed to a different hole or something. And the legendary thing with this is apparently they didn't let any of the kids see the pirate ship before they filmed this scene. And what happened was Josh Brolin yelled out, "Holy shit," at the top of his lungs, and they had to redo it. It is a cool looking ship.
Yeah. I would hope they would. Too bad they don't do this at, like, at a Universal park. Although, you know, I mean,
they scrapped the ship after the movie, apparently. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they could recreate it. I mean, if it's Spielberg's name, like, they'll never take the E.T. ride down at Universal Studios, because Spielberg was if it wasn't for his movies, they wouldn't have gotten that park done.
Yeah, you're right. It's not like the Captain EO thing, you know. E.T. isn't going to get busted for sexual assault on a minor, so the E.T. one will stay there forever.
That's, what is it, 4 or 5 hits, I think.
Yeah, he does, like, multiple ones at a time. I mean, his asthma is extremely serious.
This must be the most fun set to be on, though, I'll tell you. This is just fantasy, you know.
Yeah, the fact that they built this ship for just this, and then, you know, took it down immediately afterwards is just insane. Like, I think of, like, people who build sets in Hollywood. This is like one of the first things that I would think of. It's like, you know, like something that you had to set up. I mean, it is what the last 20 minutes or so of the movie. I mean, it is of great importance.
And all the skeletons with daggers to the eyes. And Data falls through the floor.
Poor Data, who has kind of been treated as this sort of curiosity by his friends much of the time. And he's got the crap scared out of him because all he sees is skeletons. He's just fallen, you know, 6 feet or whatever. And now he's just going off on his friends. Like, I'm tired. And then Brandon comes in and says the worst thing. Like, why didn't you just use the stairs?
Data, like, loses his shit here for a minute.
But Mikey's like, Data's fine. He's fine.
So how stupid of me. I spent months and months and months on studying them and inventing them. God.
Well, this is a stressful time for these kids. I mean, they are about to lose their house.
Yeah.
And they're gonna have to move and be split apart, you know, from their friends. So I can understand. I'm surprised more of them didn't go off during this movie.
Yeah.
And I guess all of them had one moment where they just kind of lost their shit at various points.
Brandon with the classic, watch your step, and he slips.
And he looking at a doll for whatever reason. Yes, it's a nice doll. Mouth has had enough. Like, enough of this translating shit. Like,
where's the gold?
You want me to translate, like, blueprints? Like, what do you want me to do?
Uh-oh, and Andy sets off another booby trap.
But again, they needed her to set off that trap in order to get to the next thing.
Yeah.
All of the booby traps had a reason. It's not like just them being stupid. It was, they were kind of lucky in a certain way because they can't find the gold.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to get through this trap door. And I'm surprised Mikey gets to go first, because you'd think Brandon would insert himself in,
yeah,
and go, especially since you got to lift up that floorboard or whatever. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, I think they finally pay respect to Mikey with this being his journey, and they kind of give him a little bit of space,
yeah,
to have his moment here. Now, the self-indulgent 45-minute speech to One-Eyed Willie is a bit much, mm-hmm, but...
I think Willie, you know, setting up all these traps, I mean, and making it so, like, you had to set off a trap to get... He figures anybody that survives all these traps and gets to this point deserves the riches.
Yes.
He recognizes skill in game.
For which there actually is a legal precedent as to the legal ownership of these jewels.
Ah.
Which I'll get into at the end scene. When they're signing papers, and there's One-Eyed Willie, not a penis, an actual guy named One-Eyed Willie.
So you die just sitting there.
the eye patch looks in pretty good shape, all things considered, 350 years of degradation or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, well, leather holds up, I guess, right? I don't know.
Yeah, it's got the little jewel in it, too. Where the eye is supposed to be. Mikey giving the little speech to him. For whatever reason, I think it's because Sean Astin reminds me of Rudy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess that's why they call you One-Eyed Willie. One-Eyed Willie. It's time for another asthma inhaler. I mean, how does he not run out of gas in that inhaler?
I know.
How?
How is he still functioning anyway? His heart must be racing a mile a minute by now.
Yeah. You know something, Willie? When he's like in tears, you're the first Goonie. Like, here's this pirate who killed all these people, and yet he's making him an honorary member of the group. Like, Charlie Manson, you're an honorary Goonie. You were just misunderstood by Brian Wilson and the rest of those Beach Boys, huh?
Those are my friends, the Goonies. Now, they all came up there, or they come up a different way?
I think they came up through the same thing, and they were just giving him...
Another shot! Look at this!
Yeah.
This poor kid!
And now they're just staring at the gold. And once again, they're forgetting that there are people behind them.
Yes. I think they're just in awe that they made it.
The only problem is, even if they get this gold now... And they're staring at it. How do you get out of there? And that's a problem that they're gonna have to face. Now, why Mikey wants to leave gold for a dead guy, that actually comes into play in a little bit when the Fratellis start ransacking the place. It's the very important thing where he empties out the marble bag to fill it with jewels. I mean, you can use the jewels to buy more marbles down the line. I mean... I'm surprised. I mean, given how desperate they were with the foreclosure and all that, that they didn't keister any of these. I mean, Mouth put some in his mouth, but they didn't keister any of this. You'd think desperate times call for desperate measures. I mean, make a gold enema out of it or something. But the Fratellis are there, so now shit's about to get real.
Yeah, I think the Fratellis are at their breaking point now. We had to come on this fucking wild goose chase.
Yeah, and they're not interested in cutting a deal at this point. I mean, they just kind of, you know. The two brothers just fall over the barrel. I mean, they come off as inept, but they're somewhat successful criminals.
Data's his inventions are not agreeing with him now.
Well, yeah, he already played the boxing glove card, so that's not going to work. It's like when LaRusso tried the crane kick in Okinawa.
Yeah.
Oh, but he hit Francis in the nuts with the teeth, and somehow brings himself closer to a gun.
Yeah, Mama Fratelli is that strong that holding onto a gun will pull a 120-pound child towards her.
So she grabs a sword, which is probably way worse in this situation, because there's probably a better chance that gun would malfunction, given how kind of crappy looking it looked.
Now they're rolling the kids.
Yeah, there's Mouth with it in his mouth. But if he had keistered it, if he keistered the thing, he wouldn't have this problem, and they probably weren't going to go anally probe him, at least because this movie's PG.
Yeah. Some of Corey Feldman's later work, maybe, yeah. Oh, my God. Look at all that stuff coming out of his mouth.
But the one more that he spit out.
Gross old witch. We'll play pirate. We'll play pirate.
And her hands are tied up, which is important because, you know, they're not going to force her into the water.
Yeah.
They got a sword around Brand's neck.
They kind of slash her into the water.
So, yeah. So
and Brand, look, Brandon says, excuse me, get away, let me get up in the water. He just very politely.
He's free. He can swim. Two down. Who's next? I always remember that line because NBC would go to commercial after that line. Like,
well, I think.
When they would
I don't know if. Now, was the deleted scene of the octopus, was that before or after this part? I can't remember.
That would be after this.
Maybe they were aware. Hey, you guys! I love this part.
And it calls back to what Sloth was watching on TV in that movie where the pirate comes down the sail with a knife in the exact same fashion that he just did.
Dun, 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 dun.
Chunk, apparently, he knows he's a man who knows his limitations, just like Dirty Harry said. He's got a plastic knife, because if he grabs one of those machetes, people are going to get cut by accident. he can't even go in without falling down off the rope there.
I mean, Captain Chunk.
and sort of, Sloth is sort of playing offensive lineman, you know, blocking for them to bail out. It's a nice sucker punch by Steph.
And they're going to the place where Mama Fratelli was sending them anyway.
Yeah, but they wanted to get out before they would, like, tie their hands, like what Andy had.
I guess, yeah.
And now the Fratelli brothers are trying to trap Sloth, and it's not gonna work. Every time they show his feet like that, you always think he's gonna crash through the floor like Data.
Yeah.
Instead, he's just gonna overpower the boat.
Four Datas.
And now we get the dramatic moment where he rips off that Raiders shirt, revealing S, which he says stands for Sloth rather than Superman.
And another line I use a lot, we're in deep shit now, Francis.
And then Jake now basically doing like the prisoner's dilemma thing where he's trying to say that, like, yeah, remember what these people did and I stood up for you? We both took you to the Bronx Zoo and they wanted to leave you there. And a double noggin knocker, and the toupee just kept flying off. Like Joe Pantoliano was a good sport in this movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how much work he had done up until this point, besides maybe Risky Business. Probably some bit.
Yeah. And now it's time to make out again for Brand and Andy. Just, you know, No better time than now, while we're running for our lives.
As usual, yeah, very poor time. What happened to your brace?
Well, glad that Mikey only got to first base, because it would have been really awkward if it had gone any further than that.
Yeah, I was going to say Mikey cock-blocked him, but that was Brandon's fault. He sent him in there to see, like, what she wanted.
Like, if you tell me that Mikey slipped you a digit in the little boys' room, I'm going to be really pissed off.
Now Sloth gives it to Mama.
Yeah, well, she's now trying to revert back to the caring mother and sort of, he's still afraid of him.
Aww.
But then she sings absolutely the wrong possible song. Out of all the songs that you could sing to Sloth, do not sing Rockabye Baby because of how it ends.
Yes.
Because that's a trigger. He is officially triggered.
Yes. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he could have been a, birth defect or something. I mean, the accident probably didn't help. I don't know, but that must have been one hard floor.
Looking at where they were, I don't think that they were in the most sanitary of conditions.
Yeah.
And I don't think she bought, baby safety stuff, too.
Yeah.
I think she probably dropped him and then gave up on him at a very, very young age. But now he's going to get his revenge. Now, the kids are just cheering this in the background. You can see them. And now the two brothers are tied up, strung up like a flag.
Yes. Yes, and trying to figure out where that octopus scene was. I know that the octopus kind of gets up Andy's skirt, I think, at one point.
I think that I want to say it was right around here, but yeah. maybe it was earlier. It's been a long time since I've actually seen that scene.
It might have been when they first get in there, before they get in the pirate ship, maybe.
That, I think you're right now.
You can. It is on YouTube. I know that.
Now, poor Mikey thinks he's blown it all, but. I'm gonna save it. I'm gonna save it for the very end because when they're on the beach there,
and she cuts them down, they're still fighting.
She kicks one of them in the head there.
Jake. He's the one he gets physically abused in this one.
He gets abused arguably more than Sloth. It's in some ways.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Willie. Thank you.
You. I love her little speech. It's like, what does she know for One-Eyed Willie from anything? Like, but yet she gives a 10-minute speech.
And she sets off the last booby trap.
Yep, from lifting the thing that Mikey instructed them to save for Willie.
Booby traps. Didn't you see the movie?
There's been a case, so now they can't get out. Like, oh, we need lights to see. I mean, do they not know what dynamite? Have they not seen like Tom and Jerry, like what that would look like? Like that I just do not get at all.
Yeah. Uh oh. The big boulder crashes, and now the cave's starting to fall apart.
Which it does. Like, I don't understand the physics of all of it. I can't claim to be a scientist, but the rocks just randomly falling as a result of one booby trap on a ship. I don't know how it sort of ties together, really.
Yeah, I guess. Well, Willie was ahead of his time. He was very intricate, I guess, and very, Indiana Jones-esque traps here, which, again, is another relationship because, Data, Kei Hui Kwan, played Short Round in Temple of Doom.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty, he doesn't appear, I don't know if he appeared in anything else. That's pretty, two and done. Pretty impressive. The Goonies and Temple of Doom. There's Francis with his toupee in his mouth.
And they have to go through Sloth's legs, like dangerously close to his wang, which is a little bit strange, but
Chuck, you know, against his will, has to leave Sloth's side because they bonded so much.
You do what you can, I guess. as now the anchor is coming up from the ship, and conveniently the walls of the cave just all fall down at this point. So now the ship is up for grabs. Or is it?
Yeah, how long did it take Willie to set these traps?
I mean, it had to have been 10, 12 years, yeah. I would imagine. So now that they're rescuing the kids as they're walking along the beach, I could tell you, according to international, this is from the IMDb trivia, according to international maritime salvage law, the rights to a salvage vessel and its contents go to the person or persons who first successfully brings something off the vessel in question. Since Mikey brought the jewels off the ship, the Inferno and everything on it belongs to him.
Wow.
Well, they didn't really go too far down international maritime law here, but in case you're wondering why they didn't have to foreclose on the house.
And they get miscalled the goobers by the police officers on the beach.
Yeah, Mouth's father is wearing a Mets hat. I only noticed that the last time watching this.
And there's a Domino's pizza. Oh.
Godfather's pizza. He ate his weight in Godfather's pizza, but now it's Domino's pizza, probably because that's the product placement that they could get.
Some tells me Chuck might have been banned from Godfather's pizza. I don't know.
The fact that, like, these children just disappeared on them, and yeah, I know you're happy to have your kid back, but secretly you got to be pissed. You know, they ran off, and like, especially Chunk's family brings them a giant pizza. I mean, you know, file that under, oh, that'll help. But it's actually going to get worse from there as we all play, hey, let's all look at the Asian stereotype from afar. Although it is a heartwarming moment.
Yeah.
Now we have to pay lip service to Mouth and Steph somehow being a love interest thing, which...
Well, there was like kind of a love-hate relationship going on between the two of them throughout the adventure.
It kind of reminds me of the relationship of Seth Green and that girl in Can't Hardly Wait.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of that, except they're trapped in a cave and not in a bathroom. Now Andy's going to be like, "Don't worry, your life's going to be an avalanche of pussy before long." don't worry about it. And the parents just kind of standing there like, all right, well, now they're going to make out for like the fourth time here. The mom's reaction is just great, though. Let her mother worry. Oh, he ran out of asthma medication.
He finally throws it away. I don't need any more. Look, they find the Fratellis.
Yes. It's Sloth helping his mother that he threw off the ship some 10 minutes earlier. But apparently Chunk has such a bond with Sloth now that he's going to protect him with the Domino's pizza box,
which I didn't know were bulletproof.
Oh yeah, back in those days. Pizza was very different back in the 80s. Like Domino's, you couldn't shoot a bullet through a Domino's pizza back in the 80s.
What do you think Data says in Cantonese? Like, holy fuck.
I think somewhere in the trivia it says, like, that's a big, strong man or something. Okay. Right here. Sloth, you're going to come live with me now. I mean, you want to talk about Chunk's family. He clearly rules the roost. He disappears for this period of time. The cops have to find him on the beach. And now, by the way, their house presumably is going to get foreclosed on. And now all of a sudden they're going to have this freak live with them who probably is going to cost them a lot of money to, like, feed. Like, what's going on here? That's the one part of the movie that I take great issue with, is the fact that Chunk's parents just readily agreed. Or maybe, do you think Chunk went rogue and went into business for himself? Like, yeah, you're going to live at my place now.
Yes, it could be.
You're going to sleep at the top bunk.
Again... This guy does not have sexual torture devices. I'm sorry.
Mr. Walsh is like, don't worry. You're back safe. It makes us the richest people. Plus, I have my sexual torture devices. That's how she broke her arm. No doubt. It was some sort of sex.
Thank God this guy is a very slow signer. also.
Making him sign it on the guy's back, too. That is gangsta. Rosalita has discovered a bunch of jewels but cannot communicate in any effective way to not sign the document. Now, the fact that Mr. Walsh doesn't like stop and like, all right, what's she yelling about now? No write, no sign. Don't sign.
Just rip the pen right out of his hand. He gets it on his jacket, his coat.
Oh, I never noticed that before. Yeah. He actually writes on him?
Yeah, he just takes the pen and runs it down his coat. There's some jewels there.
Look at these jewels. We got 0.00001% of all the value that was on that ship. But according to international maritime salvage law, it's all Mikey's. So he's not going to get much financial aid when he goes to college, but he'll be able to pay the freight himself. And he could probably buy the neighborhood.
Probably. See, Octopus was really scary.
Octopus? I don't remember that.
Walking the plank in the pirate ship? What are you talking about?
Everything sounds completely bullshit that they're saying, but it's all true. But of course, Sheriff Richard Lewis doesn't really buy into it at all. But now the ship. This is it's cool and fun and all, but I do have one thing that always makes me laugh with this is the reporter who's reporting from the whatever, like we're at Cauldron Point. What appears to be a pirate ship. It's the way he says pirate ship. Like, pirate ship. Like, I've never heard another human being say pirate ship. And poor Mikey, he kisses goodbye to the ship when technically that is all his.
Yes. He just doesn't, they didn't cover that in seventh grade. So.
Yeah. If he'd known his international maritime salvage law, he could have become a richer man than the 15 jewels that he fit into his marble bag.
Oh, such a fun movie! Oh.
Yes,
I could, seriously. The second time you watched it today, I could watch this every day. It's just that much fun. This movie.
As the credits roll, Man in Shower number one, Gene Ross, I believe, is the man with the eye patch.
Oh,
tennis
yeah.
player Irwin Harvey, who gets hit with the water, the water bubbler, the fountain, whatever. And they play with the pipes.
Yes. Oh, such a great movie. Oh, thank you so much. This was a tremendous. So, Peter, before we get out of here, what do you want to direct people to? Where can they check you out on the social medias? What shows you have coming up?
Well, Greetings from Allentown comes out every Thursday on both my own feed and on Pro Wrestling Only. And you can give me a follow on Twitter at GF Allentown Pod. That is at GF Allentown Pod.
All right. Good stuff. As for me, you can catch me all the time here on the PlayStation Pop feed. Episodes doing about 2 proper episodes a month of Laughing Theater. The next episode coming up after this will be Logan Crosland making his proper debut. We're going to be watching Ace Ventura Pet Detective, the original. The star making, although you can argue In Living Color started making Jim Carrey a star, but Ace Ventura really is what shot him to the moon. We have new episodes of The Year in Pop coming soon with the old cast crew of Scott, Dr. G, and D'Amato. We're going to be discussing the year 1982, as well as the next episode of Pop Goes to Classics. We're going to watch or discuss, more in fact, 1940's Dumbo, the original animated feature. That's myself, Miranda, and Chad. And over on the wrestling feed, check me out on the newest episode of Great Debate Wrestling. That was also Chad Campbell, Steve Willey, and Jordan Duncan discussing a myriad of pro wrestling topics. I really hope you check it out, as well as the next episode of The Evolution of JT Rosero stopping by, and we're going to break down the career of Macho Man Randy Savage. So it should be a lot of fun. And don't forget, Body Pressure Luck comes out every month about usually the third Friday. So check out PlaceTobeNation.com. New takes, fresh articles all the time, all of our social medias. The Greatest Junk Food Tournament has begun. Peter, do you have any thoughts on the Greatest Junk Food Tournament? Do you have any picks, dark horses?
Well, Doritos, both Cool Ranch and Nacho Cheese, are definitely favorites of mine. My favorite candy bar is O. Henry, and that might be obscure enough. I'm not even sure if that qualified for the tournament.
No. We had a candy tournament last year at this time. So, we didn't allow candy in this one. So it's breaking down new chips, cookies, a category called salty treats, which is like popcorn and Slim Jim and that kind of stuff. And then snack food, which is like, you know, Twinkies, cupcakes, fruit pies, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think Twinkies will go far. Although I have, and again, I don't know if Devil Dogs even qualify,
yep,
but they have a special place in my heart from childhood because my dad loved them. So consequently, we always had them in the house.
I can tell you as I peruse the list right now. I'm trying to get there as quick as I can. Drake's Devil Dogs are actually the number 4 seed in the snack food region. Their opening round matchup is against Hostess Ho-Hos. And they get past that, they will take on the winner of Little Debbie Pecan Spin Wheels and Hostess Snowballs.
I like their chances in that one if they can get by. Yeah.
Yeah. So it should be a lot of fun. Check that out. 4 matchups a day. Should be going for next month or so. And then our big summer music tournament will follow after that. So I want to thank Mr. Peter Winston, Greetings from Allentown, for joining me tonight to watch The Goonies.
Thank you.
All right. So, and thank you all for listening. But for now, the theater is closed. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care, everybody.
Oh God.